This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. It's going to get better with a big Monday. We have a lot on tap. Lawrence Jones in Studio Center. Rick Scott also in studio. He's here helping Vivek Ramaswamy raise some money and awareness. He wants to be the next governor of Ohio. Of course, Senator Rick Scott did both. And the president's going to be speaking at the Museum of the Bible today about Christianity and how it was really, there was really a plan over the last previous four years. It was pretty much under attack. So before we get to Lawrence, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Together we will freeze the, make buses fast and deliver universal.
Oh, can you believe this? Socialistic chants. The nation is going to know, getting to know Zohran Mamdani, and skeptics are multiplying by the day as his socialist Marxist beliefs and policies are revealed by him, not found out. He's talking about it. We talk about this and how it's playing out on the national field.
Number two.
President Trump had hoped, I think admirably, that he might be able to settle this war, but the Alaska summit was a bust. And although he talked yesterday about being willing to impose economic sanctions against Russia, I think most people are guessing right now that's simply not going to be enough.
Putin has pushed Trump too far as the attacks on Ukraine civilians heat up. Look for major announcements this week as he's also tightening the noose on Venezuela while pushing China out of South and Central America. We'll explain.
Number one.
Look, I think it's worth being taken out of context. If I said we're going to war with the criminal cartels. And Governor Pritzker protects criminal, illegal, alien, public safety threats every day in that state, along with Mayor Johnson. We proved that.
Crime crackdown. Will they be putting stakes down in Chicago any minute as the pro-crime protesters step up? If you haven't noticed, Maryland and California have bulked up their law enforcement on their own to stop Trump from coming in. But by the way, that's exactly what he wants, right, Lawrence Jones?
That's right. Took him long enough to understand this is the way you win. You can't be soft on crime. If you don't want the feds there, if you don't want the National Guard, then do your job.
Right. And they're not. And even in, for example, if you need some federal help, all you have to do is say, yes, let's just work it out. If I was Pritzker, I would have visited Washington. And you just say, hey, okay, the South side needs this, but we don't really want National Guard here. What I could use is this. But what the president wants is to get the illegal immigrants, criminals out. And for some reason, Chicago wants to hold on to them.
Honestly, Brian, it would behoove the Democrats to work with the president on getting the worst out of the country first, because then you don't have these one-off stories that you hear about of a person that was working in the country 20-plus years, yada, yada, yada. If you work with the president to get the criminals out here, that's a win for both of you.
Here's Tom Homan on CNN yesterday. Cut two.
So should we expect action in Chicago this week?
Absolutely. You can expect action in most sanctuary cities across the country. President Trump's prioritized sanctuary cities because sanctuary cities knowingly release illegal alien public safety threats to the streets every day. That's where the problem is. We don't have that problem in Florida, where every sheriff and chief works for us, right? Or Texas.
Right. They don't have that problem in Florida. So remember I was telling you about what Baltimore's doing. Mm-hmm. Baltimore is third on homicides.
Right.
But they say that they're turning the corner on
right.
it. But got some legitimate questions to the mayor. Cut five.
So you're saying there's a total coincidence that Trump's threats to send troops into the city came at the same time as these additional troops are being additional law enforcement from your state are being deployed. It's a coincidence.
This is about strategic deployment, right? This is what this is. For us, it's a strategic initiative that we have been working and asking for. And now that they have the people that they can actually do that, and now that we know we can further the partnership. Because, again, state police are working in the city. Other state police officers, MTA police, are working in the city each and every day.
So the host from CNN even said, come on, just admit it. Well, you're bulking up to keep Trump out.
They seem so disingenuous. They're just lying to people when they have this point of view. Everyone knows that there's a crime problem in Baltimore. The president was going to send the big guns in. That's the federal government to handle it. And to get ahead of that, they decided to, which is actually a good thing, to show the president, okay, we already got this under control right now. At least we're putting the manpower in place.
Here's more from Brandon Scott, Cut 6.
We understand those numbers, but we also understand that last year was another consecutive year of historic reductions in gun violence in the city of Baltimore, and that we know the National Guard doesn't work. You're talking about you and I right now talking when Baltimore has the fewest amount of homicides through this date on record. Why now? Why not during the president's first term when gun violence was through the roof?
Well, he's learned from that, and I'll add to that, too. He's saying historic lows, but still the third.
Thank you. I'm so glad you said that, Brian, because that's the part that continues to drive me crazy. All these cities continue to say, okay, yeah, but we brought it down. Now, Baltimore is 3 or 4 on the list. Chicago had 11 people last weekend and 6. Brian, when we went on the air at first, it was 5. By the time we got off of air, it was 6 people that were killed over the weekend. So you're bragging about numbers while there's still a bloodbath happening in your community.
So I also noticed this. I'm saying, what is that? I was just walking by the TV on Saturday, and I go, what's going on? So in Chicago, they were having a protest. No Trump, no troops protest to make sure the streets of Chicago stay unsafe, I guess. So they went, so what they're trying to say is the National Guard is a force multiplier. And you mentioned that they're going to play a role if ICE starts getting overwhelmed. Right. They have to have somebody to come in, especially when you told your cops not to back ICE, right?
That's right. And I talked to Raymond Lopez, who's an alderman in Chicago, and he told me most of the people that are out there protesting are paid people, and they're not from Chicago. He goes, when I talk, and look, I've been to Chicago so many different times, talk with the leaders there, the pastors there, the activists there, the people that want change. All of them say, we need help. We need the National Guard. We need more cops.
So Curtis Sliwa, who would do a great job in New York as a Republican, the odds are against him, was on with me with One Nation last night, Cut 9.
He doesn't want anybody locked up for misdemeanors of any type. He doesn't want anybody incarcerated. Nobody would be put into prison. So immediately we're in the midst of this gang retaliatory crime wave where blood is flowing in the streets of New York City. He doesn't have an answer for that. And I'm the only candidate who's the law and order candidate. I'm the Republican. I say you take gangbangers and you lock them up. That's how you do away with gang violence. He believes you have social workers coddle them. But notice, his entourage now are armed, trained NYPD police officers that are with him 24/7 to protect him. Yet he wants social workers instead of police. Hit him on the issues. He's vulnerable.
And that's Mamdani and his view on crime.
Can I be honest? Everything that Curtis said was accurate there. The problem is the packaging. And I don't think there is a real movement behind him because of the packaging. He is a household name in New York City because everybody remembers the Guardian Angels and what he did historically fighting against crime. But the hat, and a lot of people don't see him as a serious candidate. He has the right message. I can't disagree with anything that he said right there. He would definitely be better than any other candidates there. But politics is only half policy. It's the packaging as well, individuals. Right.
James Carville says that the Democrats are on a roll. He says they've won every election since 2024, and he says they're going to win in New Jersey, and they're going to win big in Virginia.
Maybe.
But he said this about crime, Cut 11.
And I just saw a poll in New Orleans where crime is down is an issue. In other words, when the crime drops, people do feel it somewhat. But it's an idiotic argument to say it's not a problem because people face it in their everyday lives. But we do know there are things that work. And as opposed to doing something that's just all for show, implement things that work. More policemen. 100,000 cops would do a lot more good than 5,000 guardsmen who are not trained to fight crime.
But your party defunded them. Your party defunding them. What are you talking about? We all agree that more cops would have solved this issue. But your party was anti-cop. Then you guys, with your buddy George Soros, got all these crazy lunatic DAs all across the country to release the criminals back. So, yes, we agree fundamentally that more cops would solve this, but you guys have been demonizing them.
And they got to be empowered when they're in there.
Right.
So they got to, like, once they get in there, they got to know if they make an arrest, the guy's going to stay in jail. It all builds on each other. If I have to make this arrest, he's going to be out in 24 hours. And they say it when you're arresting them.
Yeah.
And they come out. So they're not going to bother because this is dangerous. And number two is they just say, and people out there go, these guys are back on the streets. Why do I want to press charges? I got to face the criminal the next day.
And, Brian, it has to be consistent. It can't be the latest viral video of one cop that made one bad decision, maybe or maybe not. And that determines the policing for the whole country. That's stupid. That's idiotic to say that we're going to defund cops, get them off the street over one bad cop's decision.
When we come back, what the next step, I hope, is with the president in Ukraine, Lawrence Jones, a few more minutes. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
At Panasonic, we build technologies that turn complex data into smarter decisions, helping you prepare for what's next. From the factory floor to 40,000 feet in the sky, our solutions streamline operations and reduce waste. We're building the future so you can lead it. More than a solutions provider, we're a committed partner that can help your business move forward with intelligence, stability, and vision. Panasonic. Create today. Enrich tomorrow.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right, we are back. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. So we have a few more minutes with Lawrence Jones. Lawrence, over the weekend, I think hundreds of drones hit Ukraine. Well, what else is new? How about 800, and how about hitting a government building? Basically, their parliament building. They're trying to take the whole country. They can't do it with a standing army, but they're trying to do it through the drones and just wear these guys out while talking to Trump. I think it's an insult to the president.
Well, Brian, it wasn't just a government building. It was the civilians as well. Yeah. I mean, these weren't military targets.
They had apartment buildings.
They went after I guess you can make an argument that the prime minister, they probably would make an argument it's fair game. But the civilians there, you just really can't do that.
They did an assassination, too, at one of the lawmakers. He just killed him in cold blood right in the street. Guy got away with it, it seems. Here's what President Trump said. I think he's ready to do something. Cut 12.
Well, we're going to see. I mean, we have some very interesting discussions. You know, certain European leaders are coming over to our country on Monday or Tuesday, and individually. And I think we're going to get that settled. I think we're going to get it settled.
You know what surprised me, Brian? Maybe this is a larger debate. First of all, I agree with you that the president is annoyed now. And Putin is doing his same old trick. He talks to the president in the day and he says, I'm going to stop the killing. I want a deal. And then at night, he goes and goes after civilians. But what fascinated me is I didn't realize that the Europeans were still buying Russian oil. I mean, are you guys crazy? Are we in this together or not? Either we're going to have maximum pressure on the Kremlin or not. And that means no buying anything from complete isolation.
Here's what Zelensky said is the key to stopping Putin. Cut 17.
The most power has White House, and I really count that President Trump will do it with pressure on Putin. And this is only one way how to stop the killer. You need to take off his weapon. Energy is his weapon.
Get the price of oil. Now it's at $62. Get it down to $40. right? See if Saudi Arabia will work with us on that. So we have to start drilling. Evidently, we have not started drilling. We're speculating. There's no refinery in the works. We have to go do that and force the price of oil because they are a gas station.
By the way, Brian, real quickly, do you see the change in Zelensky? He is not combating the president. He's singing the same tune, consistent message, while still advocating for his people. In the long run, I think that's going to get the president to act quickly. Also, the other secret weapon, Melania Trump. She's furious about this, constantly in the president's ear about this, about the children and the women that have been.
And Russia's threatened Eastern Europe.
That's
and the
exactly
mindset.
Right.
You have to understand, they were dominated for generations. They finally push it off. They joined NATO for a reason. They knew the Russians were going to reconstitute and do what they do best, and that is expand beyond their borders. And it's not just Ukraine. They're already trying to affect, and they have candidates in the Moldova election. They're already doing cyber hits at the Baltics. And for some reason, mysteriously, we're pulling troops out of Eastern Europe. What are we doing? Why are we pulling troops out of Eastern Europe? Wrong message.
I was just saying this, Brian. Whether we get peace right now is only going to be a momentary thing. Putin wants all of Ukraine. He wants it. And he's not going to stop. He may delay it for this 4 years, but another Democrat gets in, and he's going to go right back
in. But guess what? Now he's going to have a fight. Every single one of those European nations is building up, and how do we know it? They're writing checks to us.
Smart.
For weapons. And that's why we have to expand our base quickly.
Smart.
To arm us
and
up.
And manufacturing
right,
as well.
Norway, Finland, all these other countries. Meanwhile, on a much, much lighter note,
yeah.
Big story, Howard Stern, a broadcasting legend who hasn't been in the cell for 5 years. He went way woke. And his viewership went from over millions to about 120,000. Mm-hmm. But it looks like he's still going to make $50, $60 million this year, maybe more. But he tried to pull off a hoax. The word is that Andy Cohen is getting way too much attention from the executives at Sirius, and it's annoying him. So here's what he did. Listen to this.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is, I know, not the voice that you expected to hear. This is not the voice that you probably wanted to hear. But it is I, Andy Cohen. And this is our first day broadcasting on Andy 100. I know that you're expecting a big announcement from Howard, and this is actually not how things were meant to go. There's been a lot of talk about what's going to happen with Howard. Is he fired? I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, except that he's not here, and I am. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, John Hill. John, a surreal morning here. Good morning.
Sweetie, you're doing great, sweetie.
Well, thank you, sweetie.
How does it feel?
I have to say, I fantasized for years about sitting in this chair. This is not how I thought this would go down.
Right.
I feel like the body, as it were, isn't cold. Howard and the executive team at Sirius felt that it was best to kind of part ways now. If you are listening, Howard, I do love you, and I hope that after you do whatever healing needs to happen, you will come back stronger than ever. I just want all of Howard's fans to know you will have a home on Andy 100.
So what happened, Allison? What was that?
So apparently that was just a gag. Then Stern came on later, which I've yet to find that audio saying, I'm back. I love Sirius. Things are great. I'm here for a while.
It was kind of weird, though. It's a weird way of doing it. But it did get a lot of media attention. So maybe that was the goal.
Yeah, I guess it's a goal.
A reset.
I mean, the thing is, there's nothing I want to hear. Sometimes I'll put on. And the other thing is, the other thing I never liked was the Whack Pack. So they have all these people with some type of malady, whether they're mentally brain damaged or they got a limp or they're just losers.
Mm-hmm.
And he just mocks them. And I go, okay.
That's not cool.
I know, but it doesn't stop. And all they do is talk about it. And
well, he also said that he didn't want, essentially, Trump voters to.
Said it flat out.
And I will honor your request.
Right.
we never say that about Kamala voters, Biden supporters. We never.
Do you remember when he kissed Biden's ass?
Right.
I mean, he tried.
Yes.
He tried to get Biden to talk. He couldn't
do it.
He's like, you were a lifeguard. You're a hero. You're a lifeguard, a hero. Are you kidding? You made $4.50 an hour.
Right.
And you had some kids pet your leg to make your hand stand up. Remember that?
And what was it? Pop? Corn pop?
Yeah, corn pop. Yeah, we have yet to find corn pop. Eric, I asked you to find corn pop over the weekend. Nothing.
And he is the most multicultural president we ever had. He's Puerto Rican, black.
Oh, he's everything.
Oh, yeah.
He grew up in every community. And he liked gay people before anyone liked gay people. Thanks so much, Lawrence.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
When I was here with you in April, there was a panic because the stock market had gone down. And you remained pretty calm, but a lot of other mainstream media people were in a complete lather over the stock market performance. President Trump, they held the views on tariffs. He was proven right. We had the quickest stock market recovery in history. We're at new highs in August. And, you know, we're not going to do economic policy off of one number. We believe that good policies are in place that are going to create good, high-paying jobs for the American people.
Scott Bessent, who is, and I think it's great for the administration to do this, good or bad job numbers, GDP numbers, the tariffs, they go out and they do interviews. They talk about it. The Treasury Secretary on Meet the Press yesterday, and he made it clear that 20,000 jobs, you know, not good, but the other thing, there is other things that are good about it, and they feel as though that a lot of this stuff is going to be revised upward. A guy that knows the reality of dollars and cents is Senator Rick Scott, former governor, now senator from New Jersey. He's on Armed Services, Homeland Committees, Government Affairs, Foreign Relations, Aging, Budget, you name it. Senator, when you saw the 20,000 instead of the 75,000 projected, what are your thoughts? What were your thoughts on Friday?
Well, first off, I think you have to be, you know, I've never felt comfortable with the BLS numbers, number one. So I think you ought to look at trends. If you look at the last 4 years, we've stopped adding full-time jobs. We're only adding part-time jobs. So Trump walked into a really crappy economy. So I think it's going to take a while. I think it's going to take a while to get in and think about it. Here's what the biggest thing we can do. It's a regulatory environment. It's permitting. And that's going to take a while. When I was governor, we went from losing 832,000 jobs or 62,000 jobs when I was 4 years before I got elected to adding 1.7 million. The big change was not the fact that I cut taxes 100 times. It's the fact that I got rid of 20% of the regulations. I streamlined the permitting requirements. And I recruited companies to move to Florida. I came to New York, I don't know how many times, just coming up here talking to companies about get the heck out of New York, come to Florida, it's a better place to do business.
So John Deere said their net income in the most recent quarter was down 29%. Higher tariffs says cost their company $300 million so far. Also complaining is Nike says tariffs will cost their company $1 billion. Black & Decker says $800 million. The big three automakers say they're going to lose $2 billion in tariffs. How do you feel about what do these numbers mean to you?
Well, first off, we finally have a president that is focused on getting American jobs. So what we've got to do is we've got to bring these jobs back to this country. It's gonna cost these companies, they're going to have to reinvest in this country. They're going to have to find out ways to use automation to compete. But look, we have lost our manufacturing base. We have got to rebuild our manufacturing base in this country. We've got to do it, one, for good middle income jobs, but two, what if we go to war? If we go to war with China, what are we going to do if we're not building things in this country? And right now, that's exactly where China wants to go. So we've got to do it. I'm glad the president is focused on how do we get American jobs. But the biggest thing I think is going to happen is we've got to make it easier to build a company, easier to start a company, easier to compete with all these crazy state, local, and federal regulations.
Yeah, I guess so. I think you're right. You also are looking at a situation where a court case the Supreme Court is now looking at could either cause chaos or keep us on course. And that is, legal experts say it's 50-50 because they ruled that the president might not have the authority, a lower court did, to issue these tariffs without Congress to do this because they don't believe it's an emergency or how the case was presented. So now it's up to the Supreme Court to get to this case. Number one, do you know when they're going to get the case? And on April, doesn't this Doesn't this decision go into play in October?
Well, hopefully the Supreme Court will take it up quickly. Hopefully this month. I don't think they've announced when they're going to take it up. Everybody I've talked to at the White House, they feel very comfortable they're going to win. Right, and if you just look at Trump, all these court cases he's had, he wins. They all start out saying, "Oh, he can't win, he can't win." He seems to win. He's got a hat they gave me. Trump has always been right, or whatever it is. Right, he does win. And so, so I'm optimistic that you know his policies are going to get this economy back on track. If you think about what do people want? He got elected because they want a secure border. He got it. They want inflation to come down. Right, it's come down. All right, and they want jobs back. They want jobs in this country.
So, Senator, you have a problem. I think it's over 100, between 100 and 200 nominees, undersecretaries, deputy secretaries, UN ambassador.
141.
They're stuck. So you got almost no one through except Jeanine Pirro last cycle. And the word is there's rule changes that are going to be implemented as early as today to unstick them. In layman's terms, what maneuverability do you have?
So for the first time ever, the Democrats have just completely blocked the ability to get Trump nominees through. Mm-hmm. Right? We didn't do it with Biden. They did not as bad in the Trump term. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to change the rules to limit debate. All right. So hopefully these 141, most of them will get done this week by next Monday. We're going to have to change the rules. It's all caused by the Democrats saying we're not going to allow Trump to have a team. This is unfair. They're not saying, oh, we don't like them. They've let nobody go through without spending all the debate time, right? That's never happened before. We did things through unanimous consent always with prior presidents. So
and
they're
you
just
put things in piles and you do it all at once, right?
So what we're going to try to do is do three tranches. So we'll do it. The goal is to get it done this week, but it'll probably take until next Monday night. So we'll start tonight. Our first vote will be at 5:30. So we'll start today through the process because it will require a change of the rules.
Mike Waltz has got to get in. It's 80 years of the UN. You're going to go at September conference. It's going to happen. We don't have a UN ambassador.
Oh, and Brian, on top of that, we're doing something that the Democrats have proposed in the past. Okay.
And which is, okay.
Put these in bigger groups.
Because you guys slow it down too, right?
So people, first off, what people have is you say, hey, look, I want to know something from you. I want you to answer some questions. Okay. But they don't say, oh, after you answer them, oh no, I'm not going to ever let you go through. It's never happened like this. There's not been one mm-hmm. nominee all year, including Marco Rubio, who got almost everybody's vote, that went through a unanimous consent.
And the whole thing is because they want to fight Trump. They feel as though their base wants them to fight Trump. Now, when Senator Chuck Schumer said, I'm not going to do a government shutdown, I'm going to sign off on this, they almost ousted him. Makes everybody think that Schumer is going to just allow and Hakeem Jeffries are going to allow the government to close in the next 2 weeks.
Well, it's up to Schumer. It's up to Schumer because it takes 60 votes. It takes 60 votes in the Senate. The decision will be made by September 30. If we don't, then government gets shut down. There's only one person making the decision because Schumer controls all the votes on the Democrat side of the Senate. Nobody else has an independent vote. He controls all those votes. He will decide whether we have a government shutdown or not. Right. I mean, here's what he's always wanted. He wants to be able to make the decision where senators that are not in leadership, top four people and the two people in House and Senate, they make all decisions. What we do, here's what they'll want to do. If we do one, they'll want to do a continuing resolution and then say, oh, we've worked really hard, which they haven't. I'm on the budget committee. We don't even do budgets. All right. So we work really hard, and we'll punt till December. Then they have $1 trillion plus some stupid spending bill that nobody knows what it is, and you have to vote on 2 hours after.
When they were in the majority.
No, yeah,
they're not going to do that now.
Oh, they've done it every year for 6 years. Even when we were the lead, okay, McConnell did it. McConnell did it. I mean, he did the exact same thing because he and Schumer and then whoever the speaker was and the minority leader in the House, they would decide what's in it and then give us 2 hours to look at it.
Now, the president said, I remember this happened twice. He goes, I'm never signing something like this again. Right. And I think he's going to hold to that.
I hope he does.
You know your leverage and no one knows it better than you, Senator Scott. is for the president to say, yeah, you shut it down. I have a whole bunch of things I'm looking to do without Congress.
Right.
And he could start lining them up and talking about the rescission packages he's going to put together and just do and things to that nature. So do they want to let Trump run wild?
Right now, it sure looks like Schumer wants to shut down government. It's great. It's not that hard to do our job, right? Maybe have a process to approve nominees. Let it work. It's worked in the past with prior presidents. Let that work. Have real appropriations bills. Let's vote them on the floor. Let's allow amendments. But Schumer's against all these things.
So we're watching a mayor's race in New York City become a national story because you have a blatant, proud socialist Marxist running who does not. I don't really like capitalism. I don't think there should be billionaires. I'm not really for, we have way too many police. I think social workers have to be on every single, misdemeanor should not be a crime, right? Not really into the prisons. He also is against charter schools. It's amazing how many things he's got, but he's got younger people supporting him. He's got 9% of the black vote, but I see Republicans are already putting him in ads, no matter where they're located across the country. What did Democrats say? They're paralyzed right now.
Well, I mean, first off, I'm in New York City. The city of capitalism is now going to elect a socialist, right? When I was governor, I came up here all the time, recruit, because Cuomo was the governor at the time. And
De Blasio was your best.
Yeah, De Blasio, they were great. Right? So because, you know, they all they did was make it hard for business. That's all they've done in New York City. So think about this. You don't want police? I want police. I mean, if something happens around my house, I want to be able to call somebody, have them show up. Mm-hmm. I like our schools have to compete. I like charter schools. We probably have the biggest charter school movement in the country. It started with Jeb Bush. He did a great job in Florida. So now we have one of the top five K-12 schools. We're number one in higher education in the country. Prisons. Why do you want people in prison? You saw that young Ukrainian girl get murdered. Why wasn't in North Carolina? Wasn't that guy in prison? I mean, that guy should have been in prison for
long
life.
Record. Yeah.
I mean, look at all these Democrats let all these people out. There's, you don't have to put up any cash for bail now. I mean, and then they want to run grocery stores. As in high school and college, I worked in grocery stores. The government's going to run a grocery store. I originally grew up in Kansas City. They had a government run grocery store. It just closed.
Mm-hmm.
It was dangerous. First off, it was dangerous and they had no food. So if Mondami thinks socialism is so good, why doesn't he go to Cuba or Venezuela?
Right.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. People come to my state because they want to get away from socialism.
You know, I think it's so interesting because now you have the governor say, "Why you keep asking me about Mondani? It doesn't matter. I'm from Buffalo. I don't vote." And then you have Hakeem Jeffries get all angry on CNBC that people brought it up. Why is that a big deal? I think Bernie Sanders said it best. Cut 27.
You have the president of the United States working to make it harder for him to get elected. So what are these people, these oligarchs, afraid of? What they are afraid of, brothers and sisters, is not only the question of bringing justice to New York City. You know what they're afraid of? They're afraid of Mr. Mamdani becoming an example to what can happen all over this country.
Yes, he's 100% right. That's what Democrats are more worried than Republicans are.
Well, I'm here because I care about New Yorkers. I mean, I do everything I can to recruit New Yorkers to Florida, but gosh, I don't want people. I grew up in public housing. How many people want to live in public housing? You say, oh man, I want to grow up to live in public housing. I want to grow up to be on food stamps. I want to grow up to go to that government-run grocery store. Nobody. That's not good for New York. It's not good for this country. So if New York does it, you know, it'll be a great example of another place where socialism fails. It's never succeeded anywhere. I'm here because I think it's really bad for our country.
But yeah, I just think that along that way, people say, well, they'll be stopped by the governor. It's going to slow everything down. They'll be able to do a lot of things and nothing moves forward at the very least. A couple more minutes with Senator Rick Scott.
Yep.
When we come back, I want you to talk about housing because they're talking about declaring emergency situation to try to unstick the housing market, which is stuck. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. Senator Rick Scott and I are talking about the other big story that's going to be this week, and that is housing. Is it a crisis? Yes, it's a crisis. So the president said if we declare an emergency when it comes to housing, we'll be able to do some things. But I have not heard a good explanation of how what we could do from Washington. And I understand the president's sensibility. I got to unstick this market. But part of the reasons, Senator Rick Scott, that people aren't buying houses is because they're in a 3% mortgage. Why is even if it's time for you to get to a bigger house, how do you rationalize it unless you have this huge bank account to make that move now to that bigger house at 7% interest rate? You don't do it.
We have a housing and affordability crisis. That's what we have, a housing affordability crisis. Now, what's it caused by? One, interest rates are up, but they're not actually – my first home, I bet my mortgage was 9%. They're not as high as they have been, all right?
What are they, around 6 now?
Yeah. So it's 6.65. Okay. I looked at this point is the average. Okay, so that's some more interest rates. Number two is look at what's happened to insurance. Home insurance, like I've been out of the governor's 6.5 years in Florida. It's doubled in that 6.5 years. Why? Because we've allowed fraud to happen and we haven't cracked down on it. It's all across the country.
It's not natural disasters.
No. I mean, we've had natural disasters for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. But so what we've got, so that's number two. And that's the second. Number three is when I was growing up, even though I grew up in public housing, the story was, oh, if you could buy a house, you had a 30-year mortgage, you pay it off, you're set for life. Not today. You have a HOA fee. You have high property taxes. Why do property taxes have to be this high?
Especially in Florida. By the way, they're not cheap in Florida.
So absolutely. So we've got to look at government's got to stop making things more expensive. How do they make it more expensive? Well, there's a fee. There's a regulatory. You got to get this permit. You got to hire this lawyer. You got to hire this lobbyist. You got to do this and you got to do this. And then you got, what government has done, all right, is they've at every level, they have all these rules, all these regulations, let people go compete and they'll come up with better ideas.
Trump is a master at cutting regulation. He did the first time, even better than he thought. It wasn't him personally, but he gave everyone a mandate. What could the HUD secretary do?
Well, so HUD is not generally involved in the regulatory environment. Most of the regulatory environment is going to be state and local. It's almost on the housing. It's almost all state and local. Like when I became governor of Florida, the Village is the most successful residential real estate development in the world. There was a state law that stopped them from growing.
So making the Villages the Villages.
They were limited. They were going to be limited to 102,000 people. I got rid of that regulation and the guy that was doing it. And guess what? Now they have affordable housing. They have nice housing. It's safe. And I think 160,000 people live there or something today. Get out of the way. Let the private sector figure this out. Quit having all these environmental rules and this rule and that rule.
So it's a little frustrating. So you're saying there's not much you can do the way you
As voters, we've got to start demanding something different out of our elected. We got to say, I'm sick and tired of being told what to do. I love my mom. I hate being told what to do. When you go vote for a local official, a mayor, a city council, whatever, are you going to limit what I can do?
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah, I guess you got an election coming up in November. You could at least identify all the problems the average people are going through. Senator Rick Scott, it's going to be an exciting off your election because we've got Virginia and you also have New Jersey. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Great to be in. See you, Brian.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. I come to you from Midtown Manhattan. Of course, you hear us around the country and around the world. This hour, we're going to be joined by Michael Goodwin, and we're going to be joined by Dan Hoffman, former CIA guy with in Moscow, was one of his stints. Also, to relax, he went to Iraq. He's going to be bringing us inside what happened over the weekend. When you hit a government building, I'm pretty sure you up the ante. After Melania Trump gives you a letter that says, please allow bring the kidnapped children back, and then you bomb a kindergarten the next day, I'm pretty sure that's a message. Big three.
Number three. The government is not that good at being in the business of being in grocery stores. So what do you say to that example?
For every one example that you can point to, there's another of another municipality today considering opening a city-run grocery store.
No, there isn't. It's you, Mom Dommy. He is scaring the heck out of everyone by talking honestly about his beliefs and his policies. They're socialists, Marxists, anti-capitalists. Not my opinion. That's what he calls himself. And the policies are revealed by this 33-year-old with no discernible accomplishments. That's who New York might elect. That's why the Democratic Party is paralyzed. I'll explain.
Number two.
President Trump had hoped, I think admirably, that he might be able to settle this war. But the Alaska summit was a bust. And although he talked yesterday about being willing to impose economic sanctions against Russia, I think most people are guessing right now that's simply not going to be enough.
It isn't, and David Ignatius understands it. Vladimir Putin has pushed Trump too far as he attacks Ukraine civilians in a parliament building. Look for a major announcement this week, as he's also tightening the noose on Venezuela while pushing China out of South America, and Vladimir Putin will explain.
Number one.
Look, I think it's worth being taken out of context. If I said we're going to war with the criminal cartels. And Governor Pritzker protects criminal, illegal, alien, public safety threats every day in that state, along with Mayor Johnson. We proved that.
That is true, Tom Homan. Crime crackdown could be putting down stakes in Chicago any minute as the pro-crime protesters, step up. If you haven't noticed, Maryland and California have bulked up their law enforcement with their state police to keep Trump away. But do they understand that's exactly what Trump wants? Security for Americans, not just people that voted for him. And there's not many that voted for him in Maryland and not many that voted for him in California, maybe 40%. Let's bring in Michael Goodwin. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian.
First off, the president's crackdown on crime. Mamdani says it's coming here. I think he's probably right eventually.
Yes, I do think so. Although New York is, I think, in a different situation than some of these other cities. I mean, Chicago, D.C. in particular. Memphis is, I think, the leading crime capital in the nation right now. But I think the consistency in a lot of these cities is that the police are undermanned, that their hands are tied by, you know, far-left legislators and sometimes mayors who seem to want to give every miscreant yet another break and never say no, never say that's enough, and have very little respect for the just ordinary safety of every of the citizens in their cities and jurisdictions. And I think this is the big divide right now in the country. I mean, whose side are you on? And the Democrats, it seems to me, whether it's the illegal immigrants or whether it is just common criminals, seem to be, if Trump is for it, they're against it. And it's a maddening approach to politics because you end up defending the worst of the worst. And the president, look, sometimes he oversteps and exaggerates, but nonetheless, he is on the right side here. And I think the Democrats have chosen the wrong side.
Here is Brandon Scott, the mayor of Baltimore, who when they first interviewed him was wearing a T-shirt. Now he realizes I have a chance at a natural platform. And what he's done is he's increased the policing in Baltimore, which is the third in terms of overall murders. And he's proud of that. But listen to even a skeptical CNN anchor, Cut 5.
So you're saying there's a total coincidence that Trump's threats to send troops into the city came at the same time as these additional troops are being, additional law enforcement from your state are being deployed. It's a coincidence?
This is about strategic deployment, right? This is what this is. For us, it's a strategic initiative that we have been working and asking for. And now that they have the people that they can actually do that, and now that we know we can further the partnership, because again,
yeah, that's it. I mean, did you see what a BS artist this guy is?
Yeah. And you know, Brian, this whole the revolution in policing that these cities need took place in New York 30 years ago. Where have they been? I mean, how have these mayors and even governors in many cases just simply been asleep? You don't have to tolerate this level of crime. You can do something about it. And the police are the important cog, and you have to have enough of them. You have to support them, and you have to have a plan for what they can do, what they should do. Obviously, a lot of this is getting illegal handguns off the street. And one of the things that I think anybody who has ever studied this, Brian, in the New York example, will show that you reduce the number of crime, you prevent crime in effect, so your murder rates fall, your rape, your burglaries, your auto thefts, all of that falls. And the result of that is not only a safer city for the honest residents, but it's also fewer people end up in prison. So the prison population also falls because people are not committing crimes because they don't want to go to, they don't want to be caught, they don't want to face the certainty of prison, and so they don't commit the crime. So you end up having even the prison population falls. That's what a policing revolution can do for a city.
So Curtis Sliwa, who's still going at it on the Republican side, told me this on Sunday, that Mamdani's plan has been unveiled. Just get ready for this. Cut 9.
For misdemeanors of any type. He doesn't want anybody incarcerated. Nobody would be put into prison. So immediately we're in the midst of this gang retaliatory crime wave where blood is flowing in the streets of New York City. He doesn't have an answer for that. And I'm the only candidate who's the law and order candidate. I'm the Republican. I say, you take gangbangers and you lock them up. That's how you do away with gang violence. He believes you have social workers coddle them. But notice, his entourage now are armed, trained NYPD police officers that are with him 24/7 to protect him. Yet he wants social workers instead of police. Hit him on the issues he's vulnerable.
I mean, that's what you got to do. It would certainly help. I don't see Cuomo doing much.
No, Cuomo acknowledged after losing the primary that he ran a miserable campaign. I think he stepped it up a bit, but it's still not, I think, scoring the points that he will need to win this election in November, because it's a little timid. It's confusing. It's often the headlines, the coverage is about President Trump trying to get Sliwa, and the incumbent Eric Adams ought to drop out so Cuomo could have a one-on-one fight with Mamdani. But I think that right now, you're right, Brian, there's a kind of vacuum in what does Cuomo stand for? What would he do? I mean, he's got all these ideas on his website and everything, but you have to drive them home every day. You have to really be committed to them, and the public has to see that you're committed to them. So I think you're right. There is kind of a vacuum now.
Right. So we're talking to Michael Goodwin about where we go from here in this mayor's race, which is nationalized. Kathy Hochul has no answer when asked about, is she going to endorse Mamdani? I mean, it's amazing. She can't answer the question. Listen to how she portrays herself as governor of New York State. Cut 30.
What questions do you still have? Can you give us a timeline for your decision?
No, there's been so much speculation about what I'm going to do. I think the bigger question is what the voters of New York want to do. I vote in Buffalo, New York, just for the record. I'm not in New York City. I'm here part-time. But listen, it is up to the voters, and there should not be outside influences on this decision from the White House on down. Let the voters of New York decide.
So, are you kidding? Gutless. Gutless.
Outside influence. I'm the governor. If I speak up, that would be outside influence. Okay, got it. Look, so many of them are running from Mamdani, and that is a significant issue in itself, Brian. Chuck Schumer hasn't endorsed him, Hakeem Jeffries, and Governor Hochul, and many others. So here you have the leaders of the Democratic Party nationally, and you have the leaders of the Democratic Party in New York State not endorsing the Democratic Party's nominee for mayor of New York City. AOC gave them a spanking on that last week, saying, wait a minute, that's the party idea, right? We all support the nominee the voters have picked. And she's right.
That is normally
what happens.
Yeah.
But the fact that these leaders have not rallied to Mamdani, I think, does show you how radical he is, even for them, that he's too radical for them. And they all fear, I mean, Hochul, for example, is up for re-election next year. And, of course, Schumer and Jeffries are worried about the congressional midterms. So they're all afraid that if they go so far left with Mamdani, they're going to lose to Republicans. And because moderates will continue to abandon the Democratic Party. So they've been walking this tightrope since June when Mamdani won the Democratic primary in New York City. And here we are, you know, that we're in the fall, we're in the home stretch now. Sooner or later, they're going to have to make a decision, yes or no, do you support Mamdani for mayor? If the answer is no, then I think that is a real lift to his opponents. But if the answer is yes, then I think they've just thrown another log on the bonfire that is now the Democratic Party.
I hear you. And the other thing to keep in mind, Michael Goodwin, is sooner or later, Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer have to do something. If not, they got to be pressed by the Republican Party. And if Spamberger, too, wants to win in New Virginia, if this woman wants to win in New Jersey, she's got to say, Mamdani's my guy, or I don't like him. Because you're a socialist until further notice. Either you run from the guy and say, New York can make their own decisions, but that's not somebody I'd support, or you just say, I'll go with what the Democrats want.
Yeah, Brian, look, I mean, I think what we were talking about before in terms of policing in Baltimore or whatever, that all this lines up with the national profile of the Democratic Party, which is it coddles criminals, it wants illegal immigrants, and it doesn't have any respect for our country, hates the norms of our country, wants the president to die. I mean, all of these very, very, very radical ideas are now dominating the Democratic Party. And if they're going to change that image, they have to take some bold steps. And one of them would be for Hochul, Schumer, and Jeffries, for example, to say, no, Mamdani's policies go too far. I will not support him. That would be the kind of thing that would, I think, get them another look from more moderate voters, not just moderate Republicans, but moderate Democrats who are abandoning the party. I mean, the registration across the country moving toward independents and Republicans because the Democrats are simply too radical. And I think that they have, in effect, destroyed their brand and they don't know how to get it back because they're afraid to do these things that voters want to see, but they just won't do it.
They won't. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks, so we'll see what's going to happen because I haven't seen a poll of late, but now without the fifth guy no one was looking at, Curtis is not going anywhere, but Eric Adams clearly is thinking about bowing out, and he wants another job, and it might be ambassador to Saudi Arabia. They did confirm that he met with Steve Witkoff. So
yes. If
he can get an ironclad deal, he might drop out. But if he drops out early, you could get this guy Jumaane Williams to take over. And he's as radical as Zohran Mamdani.
Absolutely. If Adams were to not only quit the race but quit his job, then the radical Jumaane Williams, the public advocate in New York City, would become acting mayor until a new mayor is chosen, which will be in November, and then take office in January. Look, Adams clearly doesn't want to leave, but he's also clearly entertaining the idea. Look, this idea of the ambassador being ambassador to Saudi Arabia, I think there's a hitch there, Brian, which is, of course, confirmation. That job would require Senate confirmation. And that, in effect, would require an FBI background check.
Yep.
And Adams, of course, was indicted by the Biden administration for corruption.
They took his phone.
Trump dropped the case. But nonetheless, I think that's the sort of thing that the FBI, I'm sure, would come up with some things that might give some senators pause about giving him the keys to our embassy in Saudi Arabia.
And plus, he's a true blue Democrat. So, you know, the latter Republicans won't feel obligated to confirm him. We'll see. Michael Goodwin, interesting times. Thanks so much, Michael.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
He's got the whole country looking at a mayor's race. It's unbelievable. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
But the other thing that you can see in the data, because we get the unemployment insurance claims by like county, that about 80% of the claims for unemployment over the last few months have come from blue states. And so there are places like Portland and Chicago where people are fleeing the cities. And you're seeing that in the numbers, too.
So there's 20,000 jobs added, and everyone said, good, the Trump economy is terrible. Now, the week before, they revised the GDP 3%, which is good, up above 3%. So the economy is great. All of a sudden, 20,000, 20,000, 20,000. That was the whole theme all weekend long. And that's the bias people talk about. Not that that's not an issue. That should absolutely be an issue. I know Shannon on the Sunday show, she did an education theme, which was phenomenal, really good, where you just take your whole show and just talk about education. And you talk about what we should be shaping our education to be. And then, of course, the men and women sports, that's a hot issue. And on top of that, what about school choice? That's a hot issue. And phones in schools, that's a hot issue. So that's great. So, but you have to eliminate that from the general topics. Everything else was about the Trump's economy and the tariffs. Now, you couldn't really touch the tariffs because inflation is only slightly above 2%. They want to get it 2%. But what this does is really cements a rate cut in September, if you can get your head around that. And the rate cut will begin, they hope, to unfreeze housing. But I think the president's also trying to work on some emergency measures when it comes to housing without being socialist and saying build houses and put middle class or working class people in there. But right now there's no incentives for people to take out loans and build. So, you know, just off the top of my head, if there could be something to incentivize builders to take out loans at maybe 3%, where the government picks up the next 3% and maybe factors themselves into the profits, which the president is really into these days, that could something to jar it, get some more houses out there, bring the prices down, let alone first-time houses. What's happening, too, in a lot of these communities, people aren't moving, so it's stopping the schools from getting young people in.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The most power has White House, and I really count that President Trump will do it with pressure on Putin. And this is only one way how to stop the killer. You need to take off his weapon. Energy is his weapon.
Yeah, and that was President Zelensky sat down with ABC's Martha Raddatz to talk about the latest attacks from Russia to Ukraine. Since the meeting in Alaska, they've done nothing but increase the cadence of the fight. The largest ever air assault on Ukraine happened early Sunday, sending over 800 drones and 13 missiles into the country. It was an hours-long attack. It hit the main government building in Kyiv and set it ablaze for the first time during the war. A Russian drone also struck a residential building in the capital, killing at least three, including a mom and her infant son. At least 20 other people were wounded. So what does it tell you? It tells you that we have to say that the talks are done. They have no sincere interest in it. We're embarrassing ourselves by continuing to drag this along, and we have to take action. Dan Hoffman, former CIA station chief, knows Putin as well as anyone in this country and at least how he operates, and joins us now. Dan, what does that latest attack and all the attacks since Alaska tell you?
Look, Brian, we've been saying this from the very beginning. You and I have had a number of opportunities on the radio and on television since Russia launched their brutal invasion. And it's been very consistent. Putin has one strategic goal, and that is to overthrow the democratically elected government of Ukraine. He's not stopping. We can have all kinds of discussions with Vladimir Putin, but that's not going to change his military calculus. The question is, what sort of leverage can we use on Russia? And I'm sure that's a question that President Trump is asking Director CIA Ratcliffe. What are Putin's pain points? Even if we impose secondary sanctions, is that enough? Vladimir Putin has a super high threshold for pain when it comes to his own countrymen suffering, whether it's on the front lines of Ukraine in a meat grinder war reminiscent of World War I more than World War II, in my view. Or the economic pain that he's caused his country. So I think that's the question. And President Trump can talk a lot about, you know, the war never should have happened. We should have deterred Russia in the first place. All true, but we are where we are. And Vladimir Putin wants to assert Russia's primacy in his own self-designated sphere of influence. The last thing he wants is President Trump to win the Nobel Peace Prize for solving a war that Russia believes it should have complete control over, not the United States.
Very interesting. By the way, I couldn't care less about a Nobel Peace Prize. If you saw how politicized that whole process is, the fact that President Obama got one a month in, he had to be woken up. He didn't even know what it was for. He still probably doesn't know what it's for because he's not George Bush. But here's our Secretary of Treasury. This gives me hope that we're going to do something. Cut 19.
We're prepared to increase pressure on Russia, but we need our European partners to follow us, because if the U.S. and the EU do this together, we are in a race now between how long can the Ukrainian military hold up versus how long can the Russian economy hold up. And if the U.S. and the EU can come in, do more sanctions, secondary tariffs on the countries that buy Russian oil, the Russian economy will be in full collapse, and that will bring President Putin to the table.
Your thoughts?
You know, I'm reminded of the late, great Secretary of State George Shultz, who used to say, negotiations are a euphemism for capitulation if the shadow of power is not cast across the bargaining table. He was not just talking about coercive economic measures. He's also talking about the military. That was what President Reagan did, and it's how we won the Cold War. So I continue to believe that we've got to give Ukraine more weapons to defend themselves. I think Germany needs to give them their long-range Taurus missiles so that Ukraine can strike Russia more effectively. I think it all comes down to that on the battlefield. I'm not that sanguine that secondary sanctions are going to get the job done fast enough. I just think we need to get Ukraine more air defense and more missiles and allow them to shoot at will where they choose. They're in an existential fight. And listen, if Russia does defeat Ukraine, and God forbid that ever happens, Russia will cast a shadow over the rest of Europe and threaten our $1 trillion worth of trade. So that's my concern.
They're already infiltrating the Moldova elections.
Yep.
And I heard, you know, on Friday, we saw a report that we're pulling out troops out of Lithuania and some of the Baltic nations. Are you kidding? What a terrible mess. If that is in fact true, that is insane.
Yeah. Well, this is inexpensive deterrence. If we leave, then we're going to run the risk that we may have to fight a larger and more consequential war than even the one we're fighting in Ukraine, which we don't want to do. I'm not for, you know, any more of repeating some of the mistakes we made in Afghanistan and Iraq. We're not talking about invading some foreign country and trying to bring democracy to Afghanistan or to the Middle East. We're just talking about protecting our national security interests. And I think it would be a grave mistake on our part if we were to withdraw those troops.
I want you to hear what Dave Ignatius said of the Washington Post, Cut 23.
Yesterday's attacks were the largest of the war. More than 800 drones, 13-plus missiles. And more notably, they were on this. Many of them were on the center of Kyiv. The Council of Ministers was hit. That's a building that many of us, when we're in Ukraine, go visit officials and has generally not been targeted in the war. What we're seeing is, I think, absolutely a decisive, brutal statement by Vladimir Putin that he doesn't want a settlement of the war. He wants to win the war. And he's prepared to keep fighting until he gets what he wants, which is essentially a capitulation by the Ukrainian government on key security issues. He wants effective dominance of Ukraine's military. He certainly wants Ukraine out of NATO.
So the president's hesitant because he knows the minute he gets hit with these heavy sanctions, talks are over. So he's going to call Putin this week. And Dave Ignatius, to his credit, says, I give the president credit for trying to do this, like going to the extra lengths. But now I think the door is closed. I just don't think there's anything else except for saying there's a relentless opponent. He fundamentally is using Ukraine, but really attacks us. They're trying to destabilize us as the number one economic and military superpower in the world, combining with China and North Korea and Iran to do it. So we could keep saying, well, maybe we can talk him out of it. Is it about time to realize, Dan Hoffman, there's no talking him out of it? It's only strength and deterrence.
Look, the more we talk about what we're going to do, the more indication it is for me that we've lost. Russia wants their adversaries to be weak and divided because he knows that together we're stronger and better equipped to protect our internationally recognized borders, freedom of navigation, the free exchange of goods and service on which our economy and the rest of the global economy relies. And all we need right now is some U.S. leadership. Europe is begging for it. Again, we're not talking about U.S. boots on the ground. What we're talking about is just supporting Ukraine and working with Europe to make that happen. If we fail on this one, it's a failure of this administration to get a major foreign policy crisis right. And I really think that's what did in President Biden, the withdrawal from Afghanistan. American people wanted us to leave Afghanistan. An overwhelming majority did. It's the way we did it, and it reflected so badly on the Biden administration's ability to conduct their business. And I just think this would have really negative repercussions on the rest of the Trump administration's term and potentially longer than that. Not to mention, obviously, first and foremost, our national security. So, look, let's lead from the front and do what America's always done, which is to be the arsenal for democracy and stand up to a dangerous dictator who is threatening our interests.
No, absolutely. There's no question about it. And I think we have to do it. We've got to do it quickly. And we got to just show some of the strength. And, you know, there's people in the Pentagon who don't believe Ukraine is our problem. And I hope they're beginning to see how foolish that is, this statement. Just, I don't want any foreign wars. That's a dumb statement, but I keep hearing it. It's not our choice. This is the world we're in. We show weakness, we lose control. And
yeah, I don't want any foreign wars. Yeah, I can tell you my grandparents and my uncles and a whole host of family members fought in the last century in the First World War and they went back to fight in the Second World War. They didn't want to go have to fight another war, but they did because we have two choices. We can either choose not to fight, and which is capitulation, or we can fight. I'm sorry, those are two difficult, hard choices. But the third option, which is just to walk away and raise up the drawbridge and think that our country is going to be able to exist as it has before, when the world is so interconnected, I'm so sorry, that's just not an option anymore. It was maybe two centuries ago, but not anymore.
How effective do you believe is our intelligence operations right now? How effective do you think the CIA is in talking about understanding fully what Putin's doing, what President Xi is doing, what they're really up to?
I think there's three stages here, Brian, for intelligence. The first was to collect the intelligence, human intelligence, sources who tell us what Putin and Xi are up to. And I think that source intelligence has always been pretty exquisite. At the next stage, our analysts will take that and whatever else we have, overhead reconnaissance, signals intelligence and marry that up to produce the analysis on which the president relies to make decisions. And the third point is, are we making the right executive decisions or not? And that's over to the president and his team. If we succeed in those three stages, we have an intelligence success, like when we did the raid on bin Laden, for example. You know, if we don't, if there's a breakdown in any one of those three, we have an intelligence failure. And that's something that we can't afford right now. But look, I think the president has to be in lockstep with the intelligence community, and they're going to have to tell him things that he needs to know, even when it's not what he wants to hear. And he may have to swivel in a different direction. And I think that's the test of a great leader. The best leaders under whom I served, especially in war zones, were the ones who would willingly accept new information and a swivel in a different direction to protect us.
Listen to Keith Kellogg, the lieutenant general on the ground, even before Donald Trump won. He was working as a private contractor to help them and assess what was going on there. He understands the war, the gravity of it, the damage, the way it's changed over the last 3 years. And he is the person that the president is not really bringing inside, but put him in Ukraine to represent U.S. interests. So I hope he understands that he knows best. And it's not Rick Grenell, and it's not J.D. Vance. Those guys don't look at, Ukraine as a problem. I think it's a huge problem, and I think it is very much in our interest. Dan Hoffman, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
All right. Listen, I wish it was better news. I wish that some of they even indicated slow walking the pre-process. But you understand, they fast-walked the war process. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, there's not going without power. It's hard to have a spokesman. So I don't think it's possible for us to have a spokesman, Howie, until we have a presidential nominee. I think Virginia and New Jersey, I'm just going to say it flat out, are going to be big Democratic wins. And when people see that, they'll warm up a little bit in attitude toward the Democratic Party. But I don't like the Democratic Party right now because they lost. And I don't like being in a losing party.
So, Allison, you're from New Jersey. Isn't it true that Cittarelli last time was down by double digits and almost won? So they were way off on the polling last time. So he was down 20, is now up to 9. He told Steve Ducey on Thursday he thinks it's a dead heat. Now, of course, he's a candidate. But he says there's no way. And now, look, you remember how close Trump got this time in New Jersey. And things are terrible there, right? Especially these utility bills. The utility bills, I hear, hit everybody in New Jersey like a 2x4.
Yeah, they've gone up a tremendous amount. It's insane. And then if you look at the usage, it's not as if your usage has gone up. They've just gone up. Interestingly, so, you know, Harry Hurley, one of our great affiliates, he sent me a piece because, my district, Mikey Sherrill is my congresswoman. So I'm like, Harry, I'm like, Mikey Sherrill's everywhere. I'm like, I don't know about this. And he's like, I'm telling you, Cittarelli's going to win. And he goes through decades of New Jersey gubernatorial elections and the polling and how, like, when it's two Democrats, usually the Republican will always win. We can post the link on your social accounts. But to me, that's been the most compelling. And it's been tight when the Republicans have pulled it off. But then going back to what you said, but last time when Cittarelli won, I mean, he lost, but it was only by, like, such a small amount compared to what everyone predicted. And Trump almost winning New Jersey, which is unheard of. You know, it looks like it is swinging to the right.
So look, the last poll that I could find this morning was Rutgers Eagleton poll, July 31st to August 11th, which is not recent, 44-35. I mean, that's not even recent. So Abigail Spanberger, you think that she's killing Winsome Earl Sears. It's 46-39. That's 7 points at the Roanoke poll. That was August 15th. That was August 11th through the 15th. There is plenty of time. And if Young can get in there, and if she keeps coming out that she's going to let, it's okay for these trans athletes to dress in women's locker rooms? Are you kidding? They're still doing this? School choice doesn't matter? you know, parents don't want to be heard? Are they still practicing this ridiculous behavior? For Trump overall, well, we'll see what happens. For example, I just want to get at James Carville's argument, expect two big wins. Now, number one, Virginia and New Jersey have traditionally been blue states. It was a huge upset for Youngkin. And the bigger story is how Republicans have been closing the gap since Murphy won, because he's not been an effective governor for 7 years. He's just trying to run for president. Never worked. Then he tried to get his wife in there. That wasn't effective. They had the scandal with Menendez, also the Democratic senator, and nothing's gotten better. Taxes have gone up, and utility bills have gone up, and traffic is getting worse. So congratulations, Democrats. You have earned the right to be upset. So I'm not sure that'll be momentum, but it'll be marked as momentous. I think overall, Trump says, and the economic experts are saying, that the things that are in the Trump Big Beautiful Bill, which they're now calling the Workers Family Tax Cut, are going to really take place. It could be in a year or so. So it might be after the midterms when you start seeing the effect of deregulation, the massive drilling, the investment, getting rid of legal immigration, the surge of crime, the sealing of the border. So I think that could be a little problematic for Republicans. Overall, I noticed the president's numbers are about 43% approval rating with NBC. Here's the problem. President's always had great economic numbers, but he did not inherit high inflation from Obama at all. So he kept it and dropped it. Great. We got inflation for the first time in 30 years under Joe Biden. He said it was transitory. It wasn't. It was 9. The president has dropped inflation, but it's still not 2. He needed a 2%. It's at 2.7 now, but still it's dropped. On average, 1.9, but overall numbers 2.7. Boy, this is crazy. Border and immigration. They put it on one poll. He has 47% approval on border. You got to be kidding me. He sealed the border. Nobody's coming through. How could he not have 90% approval rating on that? Democrats' overall approval is 41%. Republicans at 43%. When it comes to deportations, that is a little bit more controversial. 43%. 82% want nonpartisan commission drawing up the gerrymandered lines. 82%. So if that transfers to California, which has a referendum on that because they want to rewrite it and just wipe out every Republican, that's going to be really embarrassing for Gavin Newsom. Overall, Republicans, 87% of Republicans approve of the president. 92% of the Republicans approve of the president. They don't have those same numbers on the left.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, moving through on a Monday. I know you had a busy weekend. You are back in action now, and there's a lot going on. I'm watching the president speak at the History of the Bible, Museum of the Bible. It's a great place. I've heard great things about it. It's one of the great tourist attractions now at in Washington, D.C. that he's cleaning up. He also talked a little bit about how he's cleaning up the Smithsonian, making it a little bit more pro-American. Is that possible? Do you think Benjamin Franklin did anything more positive than have slaves? You wouldn't think so, looking at his exhibit. I'm pretty sure he did a few other things. This hour, we're going to be joined by Wes Clinton. He's fighting against the system in the state to save the nickname for the Wantagh as the Warriors, just like the Massapequa Chiefs. And why this is a national story, they're trying to bully all these high schools and schools to get rid of all semblances of who came before us. And it's such discriminatory behavior, but to be politically correct, they think it's okay to change. We're sobered up now. This isn't the George Floyd haze that we're in. We understand exactly what's going on, and they're fighting back, too. Also, this hour, we're going to be joined by Jeff Salingo. He's the author of Dream School, What You Need Now to Know to Pick a College. So let's get to the big three.
Number three, the government is not that good at being in the business of being in grocery stores. So what do you say to that example?
For every one example that you can point to, there's another of another municipality today considering opening a city-run grocery store.
That's the biggest non-answer ever. They failed. It's a bad idea, like everything the 33-year-old has. But Zohar Mamdani's getting more skeptics and more sellouts because socialists are everywhere. Watch, he was with Bernie Sanders yesterday, and he came out and they said what we all know. There's a fear that he's going to get elected. Yes, Bernie, exactly.
Number two.
President Trump had hoped, I think admirably, that he might be able to settle this war, but the Alaska summit was a bust. And although he talked yesterday about being willing to impose economic sanctions against Russia, I think most people are guessing right now that's simply not going to be enough.
That is true, David Ignatius. President trying to do things unorthodox and get Putin to the table. It's a joke. He has pushed Trump too far. The attacks on Ukrainian civilians are too much. Look for him to do some major announcements while also, by the way, tightening the noose on Venezuela, pushing China and Russia out of Central and South America. We'll explain.
Number one.
Look, I think it's worth being taken out of context. If I said we're going to war with the criminal cartels. And Governor Pritzker protects criminal, illegal, alien, public safety threats every day in that state, along with Mayor Johnson. We proved that.
Crime crackdown could be putting down stakes in Chicago any minute as the pro-crime protesters step up. They're all being paid. If you haven't noticed, Maryland and California are bulking up their law enforcement on their own. That's exactly what Trump wanted. Do you understand that? What he wants is crime to go down. What he remembers is Portland and Seattle being out of control, the shootings nonstop in Chicago in his first term. And he put up his hands and he said, ask me for troops, I'll help. And then at one point he got angry and he just sent in federal troops and they ended up being the target as he tried to save federal buildings. I mean, these idiots gave up during the George Floyd riots, gave up the police station. They just acquiesced in New York City. They let the whole place burn. Let all these rioters go crazy. And even Anthony Fauci goes, I don't think rioters need to wear masks. Really? That's revealed how political he was. So if you're going to go and crack down on crime on your own, that's exactly what he wants. How are you going to do it? Well, you're going to get state police to work overtime and come down into the major cities. Well, you want to do that to avoid Trump coming. Well, you say National Guards aren't effective. Now, please tell me why they could control things in Los Angeles despite no cooperation with the cops. And in D.C., they're still doing great. Here's Tom Homan on the ridiculous approach of Governor Pritzker. Cut one.
Look, I think it's worth being taken out of context. If I said we're going to war with the criminal cartels. We're going to war with illegal aliens, public safety threats that rape children, that raped citizens. That committed armed robberies, that distribute narcotics that kill Americans. We're at war with the criminal cartels, and Governor Pritzker protects criminal, illegal, alien, public safety threats every day in that state, along with Mayor Johnson. We proved that.
So think about this. Chicago said, well, what are you doing? Hey, Governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, why are you sending busloads of illegals to our city? I know we're a sanctuary city, but I don't want them. So they stuck them in airports. They stuck them in police stations. They didn't know what to do with them. It was destroying their budget. They'd already in the red. So now the president seals the border, stopped the buses, of course. There's nobody to bus. And then he says, I'd now like to round up many of these people, almost all of them, if they don't want to self-deport, and a million have. And I'm going to round them up, and the criminals are going to put them in jail. Oh, really? You're not going to tell me who's in jail? You're not going to tell me who you rounded up already? You're not going to let your cops cooperate at all? We're still coming. Cut two.
So should we expect action in Chicago this week?
Absolutely. You can expect action in most sanctuary cities across the country. President Trump's prioritized sanctuary cities because sanctuary cities knowingly release illegal alien public safety threats to the streets every day. That's where the problem is. We don't have that problem in Florida, where every sheriff and chief works for us, right? Or Texas.
So that's a very good point that Tom Homan brought up. They don't have that problem. Over the weekend, 5 dead, 18 shot, but they don't have a problem. So when they go in, and I think they're going to go in, do you think that Pritzker and Johnson, Brandon Johnson, I think his name is, the terrible mayor there, 22% approval rating, do you think they're going to be rooting for more dead and more shots so they can turn around and say, hey, Trump, you didn't help? Yeah, I think they are. The staging area is going to be where they were protesting at the naval base, and there's about 300 federal agents there already, and there were protesters shows up. Police. They're going to walk right through you. You're all losers. This is your living, just screaming because people, whatever phrase people want you to say, what an embarrassment you are to your family. Think about that. Now, in terms of the National Guard, they are a force multiplier. If you're going to attack ICE, they got it their back because cops won't, even though they want to in Chicago. They're not allowed to even chase criminals. So what's happening in New York? Zohran Mamdani wants to debate Trump. He also says Trump's going to come to New York. You just watch. Cut eight.
We saw in California the mayor of L.A., the attorney general of the state, and the governor work together to fight back against the White House's deployment of the National Guard. They filed a lawsuit. A federal judge just recently found in their favor that the deployment of the National Guard was illegal. I give you this example because partnership is critically important in fighting back against Donald Trump.
All right. Partnership. Fighting back against Donald Trump. Now let's dig into that. Partnership. Because of the riots in the area, the illegal immigrant criminals running wild, the burden on the tax system, of the school system, of the college system, of illegals in your country because you dropped the border, all the border protections. That's what you're protecting your people from? Security? I'm protecting them from security. Do you think they're walking around just picking up children and families and just sending them out? No, they're getting illegal immigrant, many criminals, most criminals, out of there. And they're going to go into areas in which they're taking jobs from Americans. You're trying to protect your people from that. I think the guy in Baltimore is absolutely hysterical, by the way. This guy, this mayor, Brandon Scott, looks like he's 11, but, you know, youth is, to look young is always a goal. He first, when he hopped on television, he just sounded like the guy down the street wearing a T-shirt. Then I realized he was actually mayor. Now, each time he goes on, he's a little bit better dressed. He also realized we are number three in murders, and we're bragging about the decrease in crime. That's what you're bragging about, being three in the nation in murders. So listen to this question, even from Manu Raju, I think his name is, on CNN. Cut five.
So you're saying there's a total coincidence that Trump's threats to send troops into the city came at the same time as these additional troops are being different law enforcement from your state are being deployed. It's a coincidence?
This is about strategic deployment, right? This is what this is. For us, it's a strategic initiative that we have been working and asking for. And now that they have the people that they can actually do that, and now that we know we can further the partnership. Because, again, state police are working in the city. Other state police officers, MTA police, are working in the city each and every day.
Okay. Nothing to do with Trump. Westmore, nothing to do with Trump, right? You know, he says he's not running for office. Remember Hillary Clinton kept saying that, I'm not interested in running. She left after 2 years as Secretary of State just to get ready to run, she used to say. And, of course, she just went to run. Westmore's going to run. Unless somebody moves out so far in front, he can't raise any money, but he's going to run. And now they all want to be famous by taking on Trump. But good luck with that. You could do that, but what are you going to be known for? A guy that took on Trump that's not running for re-election. We'll see what happens at the midterms. I think the key is going to be if the president can get that inflation number down, get the interest rates down by pressuring however he needs to do it, the Fed, and cracking down on crime together, along with sealing off the border, that's a pretty strong resume. I also love what he's doing down south in Central America. He's making moves. He wants to stop the drug trade. He wants Maduro out. He knows he's at the hub of all of it. Amongst his supporters, Mike Lawler joined me on One Nation. Remember, he blew up that, he declared Maduro a terrorist and he said TDA is a terrorist organization. Two more Ecuadorian gangs he named a terrorist organization and then took them out. Idiots like Rand Paul, who's just useless, arrogant, came out and said you shouldn't be doing this. Good luck. Maybe the next person who dies from fentanyl will be someone in your family. And then you'll really understand why Trump's doing what he's doing. Cut 26.
I've been saying this for years, that the cartels need to be treated as terrorist organizations, because that is exactly what they are. And he is right to designate them as such, and even far righter to take action, as we saw this week, striking at ships that were trafficking drugs. And the fact is that these narco-terrorist states like Venezuela and these terrorist organizations, these drug cartels, need to be treated as such. And I think the president is spot on in what he is doing, and I fully support it.
There you go. When we come back, I want to talk about something else that should matter. If you have a American Indian name on your high school that's been there since your high school started, is being pressured, if you're in New York, you're in Colorado, South Dakota, to get rid of those names. And some people are fighting back, and we want to support them, including Wantagh, the Wantagh Warriors on Long Island, right next to Massapequa. Wes Clinton joins us soon. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. As you know, one of the missions I have here is to bring light to when governments bully people that don't have the power. And another example popped up in my backyard when a school I went to, they were called the Massapequa Chiefs for years, and over the last 4 years, the governor decides, I think that's an insult to the American Indian, so I'm going to make everybody change. It's going to cost you millions of dollars, and if you don't do it, we're going to take your state funding away. Well, when you have people that can't really afford to replace a blackboard, like in working class areas, they have to cave, whether it's a small like towns like Brentwood or Elmont. When Massapequa has a resource, they said, no, we opened up in the 50s. We've been proud to be the Chiefs. We do nothing but respect the people that were here before us. And it turns out most American Indians feel the exact same way. This is all a trumped up George Soros thing to be politically correct. So as Massapequa fights and gets Linda McMahon and President Trump in their corner, we found the T-Birds yesterday of Connecticut decided to take a compromise and no longer called the Thunderbirds or the T-Birds. So that saved them millions of dollars. But people are upset by that. Well, next door to Massapequa fighting this national fight now is Wantagh. Their name is the Warriors. Actually, it's a great name. It shows somebody that fights. You could see the Indian chief depicted in their emblem. But they're going to be forced to get rid of it. Wes Clinton joins us now. His initiative is to keep that name with his town. The problem is the school board's not fighting it. Wes Clinton, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Wes, what are you doing to keep the Warriors in Wantagh?
Well, I never thought I would be, on a talk show talking about something so, I don't know, as much common sense as you can get. You know, when you talk about the school board, I can't talk for them. And I don't want to say that they're not fighting, because there are people, there are good people on both sides. Where have we heard that before, right? So there are good people fighting for this. But, is it extortion? Is it something else? I mean, look, I'm a third generation from Wantagh. My daughter would be the fourth. And, I think my precipice was when I was just sitting at my computer and I read that they wanted to take away the name Warriors. And I was like, hold on, they're taking away the logo, which is, the fight. Everyone knows what that is. But the name Warriors, I mean, who is that offending? Like, that's, to me, it's not offending anybody at all. I mean, you can even have bad Warriors, right? I mean, from the left and the right, you could have Warriors, whoever they are. So for me, that was my precipice. And I mean, I'm just one guy. So I'm just like, how do we do this? How do we fight back without being violent, right? Because violence isn't the answer here. What do you do? And I'm not a social media guy, but I said, can I make a Facebook page? And can we get flags all over the town? And I just thought, hey, what better way to make a statement than to have flags with our beautiful logo, the name Warriors, all over town, all up and down Wantagh Avenue. And it would pretty much show what the people want.
So, what's the response been?
Well, so far it's new, but so far, yeah. I mean, you're getting everybody, whether you're Democrat, Republican, everybody sees the same thing. This is it's ridiculous. It's to the point of where do you know when to give in, right? Like, where do you know when it's enough's enough? When do you draw a line in the sand? And for me, I think Massapequa was super important. I think if Massapequa loses, this is how important this is. I think if Massapequa loses their fight, which In my opinion, I don't think that's going to happen. I really think all the momentum is on our side right now. I think we've reached a point where we realize, hey, if we don't win, it's over, right? But this is a Pandora's box. If people think they're going to stop at the name Wantagh Warriors, right? No, forget about Wantagh Warriors. And with a logo, that's we're not talking about a Baltimore Orioles logo, which could be offensive, a really red face and really dramatic, right? But, I mean, we're talking about something that's
it's no problem. Well, put it this way. You got to be able to keep it. There's no doubt about it. They're going to go for your name of your town. Wantagh is named after Wantagh Indians. Massapequa named after Massapequa Indians. They're going to talk it. They're going to go after every town. And what's going to be the result of that? No one's going to remember the American Indian. And that's the exact opposite goal they say they want to do.
You know, Brian, I really like what they decided to do is to fight the fire with fire. You know, the Native American Association that went is going after this with Massapequa, it's NAGA, right? The Native American Guardians Association. They are fighting tooth and nail. I mean, I don't know what else you need, but to have the people telling you that they're it's basically discrimination.
I mean, there's like Mohawk Indians, other Indians that are upset by that, but how many are paid off and how many just don't even, you know, just are bitter people? They're offered, like the Seminole Indians with Florida State, they were offered a deal to have an education program and have a place, and they said, great. But these people don't want to cooperate. But the majority of American Indians do, and they don't want to be forgotten. Wes Clinton, where do you go to help you?
Yeah, so there's a Facebook page called Save Wantagh Warriors, and you can go and purchase a flag there. All the money goes towards local business here. And
hopefully the school board will sober up and fight with you. Wes, thanks so much.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Keep in mind, don't forget, One Nation, on Fox Nation, I should say. We're going to be on stage September 27th, Richmond, Virginia. Tickets are running out, so go to BrianKilmeade.com. We're going to stream on Fox Nation. But being in the theater for History, Liberty, and Laughs is like no other. Every show is different. Meanwhile, let's talk about colleges. Everyone's back in school now, and then if you're in your junior, senior year, you're thinking about colleges, maybe earlier. Well, a guy that's been doing this for 25 years has a brand new book out. It's called Dream School, Finding the Right College That's Right for You. Finding the College That's Right for You. Jeff Salingo joins us now. Jeff, welcome.
It's good to be here, Brian.
So, Jeff, when people think of the dream school, they'll think Ivy League school. Oh, Duke. I finally got into Duke. I got into Harvard. I got into Stanford. That's not what this book's about, though, is it?
No. And in fact, the case I'm making in this book is that dream school is not a single name. It's not even a type of school like the Ivy League. It's really where you're going to find your people, where you're going to thrive, where you're, by the way, going to get the hands-on experience that you need to get a job after college. That's really what the dream in dream school is about.
So you want to see career services. You want to see
a school that wants you targeted
towards a job.
Yeah, I mean, when you ask freshmen now, going all the way back to the Great Recession, what is the reason they're going to college? It used to be to learn something. Since 2008, the number one reason has been to get a job. And so the schools that I feature in Dream School, I have a list at the back of 75, what I'm calling new dream schools. All of them are focused on many different things, including career services.
So give me some examples of some schools that should be on the tip of my tongue that you feature in your book.
Well, so the University of Alabama, Southern Methodist University.
And I should say, there's a big migration south for money and return on investment.
There is a big migration south. Yeah, but we're even looking further north, Indiana University, Michigan State, right? When people think of the state of Michigan, they think the University of Michigan. Well, Michigan State actually has some better outcomes than Michigan on a number of different measures, but we don't tend to think about it as a result. But we're also thinking of like small colleges, Dickinson College in Southern Pennsylvania or Denison University in Ohio. These are places that have been really focused on getting their students real-world experience, but not only that, at a pretty good price. Most of these places are giving out great scholarships or pretty good discounts on their tuition rate to get students. But we're so focused on prestige, and really what the outcomes show is that at the outer limits, yes, going to whatever you consider a prestigious school is going to get you higher earnings over time. But we're really thinking of the outliers. We tend to over-index on the outliers, those kids who go to Goldman Sachs or work for McKinsey. But most students who graduate from college, they're average. They make the average earnings. And the average earnings are pretty similar no matter where you go.
So the thing is, you want prestigious schools because your perception is that the job market wants to hire prestigious graduates. Is that a correct perception?
It is a correct perception, but we did an analysis in the book of like three Fortune 50 companies. We looked at Microsoft, we looked at General Motors, and we looked at Goldman Sachs. And those three places, we found that actually they have more graduates from schools that are not in the top essentially 20% of schools in terms of admissions rates than they have from those schools at the very top. And so the part of the issue here is that there's just way many more students who have graduated from the big publics, the other privates that are not on the tip of everyone's tongue or on the back of everyone's car. So at the end of the day, people have to widen their lens on the schools that they're looking at to get into college.
Absolutely. So how would things change? And what are the most productive majors? Have you figured that out, Jeff?
Well, you know, I'm laughing because in this age of AI, I think everyone's questioning what are the future jobs going to be? And, you know, there's no major that definitely pays off. You probably have seen these stories of students who majored in computer science because a couple of years ago, everybody said, go into computer science. It's like back in the 70s, right? Go into plastics. Well, now, if you go into computer science, you could be a barista at Starbucks because there are fewer computer science jobs because of AI. So my take on this is get a major where you're going to be able to get real world experience. That could include skills that employers want. So even if you're going to be a history major, know how to visualize data. If you're going to be a marketing major, know how to do data analytics. And by the way, more than anything, get that internship. Those internships in college are really what gets you the job after college.
Well, how do people look at colleges than they did years ago? I've constantly had Mike Rowe on, and he's saying people go to college, they end up in debt. They don't know what they want to do. 4 years have gone by. If you just reopen to a blue-collar job, you can make a ton of money because there doesn't seem to be many people doing it, but there's a trend back to it. So what are you finding?
Yeah, there's definitely a trend back to it. And in fact, if you look at the numbers, back in like 2017, 70% of American students who graduated from high school went right on to college 3 months later, 70%. Now it's like 60%. So those students are going to do something else. Many of them are getting jobs. And by the way, they're getting jobs at places. I've interviewed students who got jobs at an Amazon warehouse, and then they're actually getting a degree on the side. Amazon's paying for it, right? So you're seeing students start to question that. Now, with blue-collar jobs, the issue I think still is in many communities, they're like, well, you should go to college, right? At some point.
Yeah.
But, you know, many of those jobs require some sort of post-secondary education anyway. You're going to have to, even if you want to be a plumber or an electrician, you're not only going to need to get on the job experience, but you're probably going to need at least a 2-year degree anyway.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, this is what I'm finding in talking to a lot of employers, mainly because they want students who over time will become managers and run the company. And so often they think a college education helps there.
When you look at what point you take out, is the school worth it to take out a student loan? And then people say, well, this school is so great, I want a parent loan because I just want to be able to make sure my kid gets into that dream school that you write about.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about parent loans now is that after the big, beautiful bill, they've actually cut back on the ability to get parent loans. So that access to that money for parents is going to become a lot less. And so they're not going to be able to necessarily fund those dreams for their colleges. As I always tell students is to really look at the ROI. If you're going to major, if you want to be a school teacher, for example, don't go to the most expensive college out there. And sometimes that's what they do. They end up going to, they want to be a teacher, but they end up going to an expensive private college when, by the way, they could have gone to the public university down the street and pay a quarter or half of the price to do that. So you really have to look at what is the earnings going to be over the course of your of the first couple of years, especially after college. And in the book, we did this thing where we had price to earnings ratio. And we really looked at this. We only looked at schools that had a high price to earnings ratio so that you know what you're going to invest and what you're going to get back.
So when you study this, do you have to follow through for the student to see how the student gets a job and how long they hold on to that job for this, for you to get a full understanding of the impact of that college, right?
Yeah. And then many times I've actually, you know, not only do we see that in the data, you're able to, you know, LinkedIn, for example, we worked with their data team to figure out like where these students are getting jobs. But not only that, we interviewed a number of alumni in the book, and we did this survey of 3,000 parents. And, you know, the number one thing that parents wanted from their kids' college was a fulfilling job. Number two, they wanted their kids to find good friends. Number four on the list was prestige. So I think even parents get this.
Yeah.
In fact, we saw in the book that parents were willing to trade in paying full price for prestige. They were willing to, you know, pay less for a less prestigious college because they wanted to save the money.
Right. The other thing is to pick a college that you can afford, that people get to, but also to pick a college that you also grow personally. There's stuff you learn in school, but the other thing you learn time management, to function on your own, to live on your own. A lot of people don't do their own laundry. They do have to now. They're living away. All those life skills that you learn, you don't take a course. You go into that dorm, and it's usually not a great dorm room.
No, it's not at all. It's still cinder block walls, although there's a whole industry now that will decorate your dorm room if you want it. But you know, college is about a maturation process, right? If students don't go to college at 18, we have to figure out something. You know, we don't necessarily have to warehouse them, but we have to figure out something to do with them to turn into young adults. And, you know, the military could offer that option, work could offer that option, but a lot of people with just a high school diploma can't find the right jobs. And so you know, college has become the default. You were talking about Mike Rowe. I think that's his concern, is that some students go to college when they're not really ready for it. And I think that's my concern too, and that this is why I push the idea of maybe you start a two-year college, maybe you start college on the side as you're working, maybe you take a year off and do work while you're trying to figure out what you want to do instead of spending that money.
A lot of times universities need you now, so they'll love those junior college graduates, and they'll offer them incentives and money to go there afterwards. So that certainly helps. Lastly, when it comes to these protests we see at Columbia, NYU, UCLA, Northwestern, I could go on and on and on, Harvard, a little bit of Princeton. People are concerned. They don't want their kids to go and get indoctrinated. The last thing they need is to have their kid come home on winter break hating the country. This is a real situation now. How is that handled by these schools?
Well, you're starting to see, I mean, you know, these schools still have name brands that have lasted hundreds of years. There will still be people who want to go to them. But I think you're starting to see, I get a lot more questions now than I ever did before, is, you know, will my kid fit in here? Will they feel safe here? I mean, one of the things that I heard during the reporting for this book is that students who decided, you know what, I didn't really want to go to one of these highly elite schools, especially there is this migration from the north to the south from students. And one of the things, when I talked to these students who went to southern schools from the north, they said it's nice not to have politics in your face every day. So they really enjoyed just enjoying not only big time football and Greek life at those schools, but they enjoyed trying to learn and being focused on that. So you're starting, that's one of the reasons why I think some of these schools will pull back, because they don't want to lose these students.
All right. So Jeff, the name of the book is Dream School, Finding the College That's Right for You. So if people are listening right now, have kids, or they're listening directly, juniors or seniors, when do you start looking?
Well, when you start looking is if you're seniors, you should already be in the process. Applications are going to be due in a couple months. But if you're juniors, this is a perfect time to just go and tour college campuses. Even if you don't think you're necessarily interested in that school, go in an hour or two of your home. You probably can find a big public university. You can find a small liberal arts college. You can find, you know, an institution within a couple of miles of your own home. Usually just go and walk around campus and see, is this what I like? Do I want something big? Do I want something small? Do I want something far away? As a junior, that's really where you should start.
Got it. Congratulations on doing this. 25 years of your knowledge all goes into this book called Dream School. Jeff Salingo, thanks so much.
It was great to be here. Thanks, Brian.
All right. When we come back, we'll find out if there's indeed more to know. There's so many other stories going on that don't necessarily capture the headlines. We'll get to that and more. You're listening to Monday's edition of the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Miss a show? Have to tune out early? No problem. Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews, on demand. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at FoxNewsPodcast.com.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
First sitting president since Clinton to attend the U.S. Open.
Not every day that happens. Queens boy.
Like us, right?
Exactly.
Well, I loved it. First of all, the two players have unbelievable talent. It just seemed that they hit the ball harder than I've ever seen before. Incredible talent. And I enjoyed it. And I used to go all the time, but, you know, lately it's a little bit more difficult to go. I really enjoyed it. They were really nice. The fans were really nice. I didn't know what to expect. Usually you would say that would be a somewhat progressive, as they say nowadays, crowd. Sometimes some people would call it liberal, but we'll use the word they like to use, progressive. But they were great. The fans were great.
Yeah, and that Carlos Alcaraz captured the U.S. Open title in four sets. Congratulations to him. President was there, loved it. And, you know, he got some mixed reaction, not when he initially walked in. That was huge cheers, reportedly. But when he got announced again or they showed him during the match, there was mixed. And why one of the reasons they mixed, number one, New York City, it's his Queens. They didn't vote for any Republican ever. But it took... Everybody was 50 minutes late. Everybody was kept on the outside because Secret Service had to go through everything. And if you see where the president lined up, he's literally the suites are right next to the regular stand. So he was really exposed to the whole crowd. So people were a little ticked off, and the match was delayed 50 minutes. But you saw John McEnroe and Patrick McEnroe, both from Queens. He goes, this is another Queens boy. The president hadn't been there since 2015, and he wants to be part of it. I do know this. On 9/11, he's going to be downtown New York City, and on 9/12, he's going to be in the studio on Fox and Friends. So that's going to be great. So I look forward to seeing that, and it'll be a nice little sweep to get him here. President's got to be sure that everything's okay. Why? Two assassination attempts. Need a reminder? Today, it's the trial of the second would-be assassin who sat outside with a long rifle outside his golf club. As he was making the turn, a very sharp Secret Service agent saw a rifle sticking out of the chain link fence, went over there, and there was this clown who's now representing himself and a total lunatic. And this is going to be a circus. But just goes to show you could be a lunatic but know how to shoot a gun. And to want to shoot a president, you got to be crazy anyway. So we were almost subjected to this guy being the next Lee Harvey Oswald type character, or the president, although the president wasn't the president yet. Can you imagine our country if this guy had been taken out by this guy? I don't even want to mention his name. I don't want to give him any additional credit. But the president likes going to these things. Today he's at the Museum of the Bible. So that's big. He's also doing things, like I just mentioned, with helping out Massapequa and Wantagh save their nicknames. He's also working hard to straighten out the Smithsonian. Why are they going out of their way to talk about transgender athletes? Why are they talking about what an icebreaker? I don't even want to mention the person's name. They're in the same row as Osaki and Billie Jean King. Why is that Smithsonian? Why is Benjamin Franklin exhibit feature the fact that he had slaves? Do they know that he quickly realized how wrong slavery was and he spent the remainder of his life as an abolitionist? You think that's part of the story? But he's even involved in that. Same with the Kennedy Museum. Kennedy Theater. You know, I don't really care about that. But it bothered the president that they basically told him 4 years prior, don't go. He said, okay, this time will be a little different. You're all fired, and I'm going to be the host of the Kennedy Honors Awards. By the way, Tom Hanks, who's been a big critic of the president, been really dismissive of the president, but has been a big advocate for the military, was told, you're not going to be honored this year at West Point. He was going to be for his work with Band of Brothers and different documentaries he's done, Schindler's List, but they just said no. And it has to be because he's just a huge critic of the president. And the president at this point, I don't need it. Yeah. Do I need somebody up there talking about what a terrible person the president is? How he didn't vote for him, especially Hollywood? Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com. I want to see you in Richmond, Virginia, WRVA listeners especially. BrianKilmeade.com, September 27th at the Carpenter Theater. Just go there, get some tickets, VIP tickets remain. Let's sell this place out, history, liberty, and laughs.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.